Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, you are listening to Just Films and That. This is the podcast where we talk about films that we think deserve a little bit more love. I'm Josh Hallam, and I'm joined this week by my co-host, Alice Oliver. Alice, you all right?
All right. You all right?
Yeah, I'm all right, yeah.
Right.
Sure you're all right?
Yeah, right.
Yes, I'm very well, thank you. We're going to talk about a film, aren't we?
We are. That's usually the format, and we're sticking to it.
But it's not just us, is it?
Not just us today.
We are joined by our first guest of 2024. Could be our last guest. Depends how this goes. we are joined by he's a wonderful podcaster. He's Tom Davis from Proper Mental Podcast. Tom, how are you, sir? Welcome to the podcast.
Oh, I'm good. I'm really good. Thank you both for having me. Yeah, hopefully I like the idea of being the first and last guest of the year. Kind of just wraps it all up.
So well,
fingers crossed for that. You know,
it's peaked with you anyway, to be honest. Because I mean, all the other guests we have on, I mean, none of them are any good, really. Never really taken to any of them, have we, Alice?
No, definitely not. We're definitely not begging him to come back on every
other
week.
No, I've never spoken to any of them ever again. Anyway, Tom, so thank you very much for coming on. We always start guest episodes with a random question, which we put out to the listeners, and they've excelled themselves in the randomness this time. But the one we've picked is from Jack, who is at JAMag92 on Twitter. Would you rather have fingers the length of legs or legs the length of fingers? Alice, I'll come to you first. Now, we've done similar ones to this before to do with arms and legs and telescopic arms and telescopic legs. But this is a little bit different because it's like, what would you rather have in terms of like, basically, you're going to have a little something.
Yeah, I mean, both wildly inconvenient. I don't think I would choose either, but if I, you know, gun to my head, had to choose between the two, I guess I'd go for fingers the length of legs. So then you've got five of them?
You'd have 10 massive fingers.
That's wild, isn't it? That is wild. But
how
yeah,
would
I think
you do
so.
Anything?
With great difficulty. With great difficulty. But I think I'd have to, because otherwise, I mean, unfortunately, the world isn't really designed for incredibly short people. Everything would just be incredibly difficult. Mm. I mean, I'm not saying it wouldn't be with my 10 gargantuan.
Oh, yeah, it'd be an absolute piece
fingers.
Of cake with fingers the length of legs, wouldn't it?
You might be an incredible piano player, then you could do it like from a distance.
From a few
like,
feet
could be,
away.
Like, your thing.
The leg fingers the same sort of weight as legs? Or is it like, you know, basically when you're lifting your fingers up, it's easy, isn't it? But are they the weight of legs? So are you essentially trying to lift 10 legs up? So if you wave at someone, are you picking five legs up and then waving them and they're flopping about everywhere?
Too much effort, that, isn't
it's
it?
A lot of
they
effort,
weigh
that,
the same.
You haven't thought this through.
So what would you pick? Are you going for the legs?
The other one. It's just the least convenient. It's basically, I suppose that is sort of like having no legs, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
So the world's far easier. It's not easy for people with no legs, but it'd be far easier than having the weight of 10 legs
on the end of your hands. Possibly. You might be onto something there, Josh. Yeah. Told you were going to get deep. It was going to get deep here, and it did so early.
Well, luckily, that's how I roll.
Oh,
so,
good.
That's good.
Anyway, Tom, what about you? What would you say?
What about me? Well, my initial thought was going for the little legs, but then...
Little finger legs.
I'll tell you who popped into my mind is I've not seen a Guinness Book of Records for a very long time, but when I was a kid... And it was the sort of thing I used to get for Christmas. There was that fella who had really long fingernails. I don't know if you remember
him. There was that fella.
Yeah.
And I think he did all right with them.
He did, to be fair.
If I could keep my legs and just have fingers, maybe get some tips off the Guinness Book of Records fingernail guy of how to navigate. He must have had similar sorts of problems. And so I think that's how I'd play it. I think I'd go for long fingers.
Ah, Guinness Book of Records. There was always him. There was the lady who could pop her eyes out really far.
Oh, yeah.
And there was the lady with the swirly whirly nails. Did you ever have those ones? They were like a spiral nails. They were so long, they were spirals. Yeah, yeah. Oh. I've not read a Guinness World Book of Records for years.
Yeah, you don't need it now because you just see it on Instagram or Britain's Got Talent. True, you know, that could be a talent now.
Google it, assume it's right, don't question anything. Life goes on. That's what the world is now. But anyway, we were going to talk about a film. And the film that Tom has brought that we would like to discuss is Into the Wild from 2007. So Tom, tell the guys at home a little bit about what it's about, but more importantly, why did you pick it for this podcast? Is it underrated? Is it underseen? Do you just want to talk about it? Let's hear it.
Well, I think underseen is how I'd like to go on this one, because I think, like, critically, particularly at the time, I think it did quite well. But I seem to meet a lot of people who haven't seen it. Mm. And when I try and describe what the film is, I can see why people haven't seen it, because it's, you know, it's very hard to describe. It's quite a hard sell. But before I get into it, I do want to put a caveat on that, because I know that in January, you guys often go for the more upbeat films.
We
because January is a tough month. I appreciate it. I haven't done that at all.
I don't think that's too bad. Some of it was quite nice.
Yeah, I'm willing to explain / defend my decision. So
the worst things you could have picked.
That is true. That is true. But I'm a big fan of sort of controlled distraction, right? And if you are feeling a bit down and you want to throw something on to put you in a good mood, yeah, that's great. I'm all for it. But sometimes, rather than something to sort of distract you and entertain you, you need something to meet you where you're at, right? You need to kind of something that's going to help you wallow. You don't want something that's going to completely break your heart and, you know, make you feel really bad. But yeah, just something with a bit more sort of emotional depth to kind of like help you through the whatever it is you're going through. And that's kind of what, there's an emotional level to Into the Wild. There's so many different things going on in that movie. And I think it really kind of, there's an awe and a wonder to it. That's certainly, I remember watching it for the first time and feeling that. So that's kind of why I went for it. But it is essentially, it's based on a book. And the book is a true story of a young American man called Christopher McCandless, who essentially walks into the Alaskan wilderness and survives there on his own by living in a bus. And the film is about why he decides to do that and how he gets there. It takes him a couple of years of wandering around to get into the Alaskan wilderness. And he finds an abandoned bus and he lives there and he dies there as well. Mm. Spoiler alert. But and that, in a nutshell, that's about it. And that's probably why it's underseen, because, I've seen it, and listening to me say that doesn't make me want to watch it again, to be honest with you.
I think it's definitely picked up legs since it came out. This is always one of those things that's, because obviously we have a social media for this podcast, the algorithm is skewed towards films, right? So it's always coming up on the browse bit. I mean, I try to avoid scrolling for no reason if I can, but obviously sometimes you can't avoid it if you're trying to post something and you see it and before you know it, you've been distracted or whatever. But this comes up quite a lot on like life-affirming films, uplifting films, that sort of thing. So I know what you're saying with the nature of it. And obviously it does deal with some issues and it ultimately does end quite tragically and stuff like that. But I think the reasons behind it and the freeingness of, you know, it's an exploration of freedom in that sense. And I think that is what people find quite uplifting about it, because I know it has developed a status to such a degree that they've actually had to move the bus. So a lot of people are people were trying to get to the bus and either getting stranded. A couple of people sadly lost their lives trying to get to it. Obviously, it's not an easy place to get to, as you see in the film. But anyway, Alice, I'll come to you now. So I can't get a read on you for this one. Is this something you've seen before or not? I feel like you surprise me, because sometimes you've seen, like, you've not seen like E.T., but then also you'll have seen this because your dad had it on video or something.
I've seen E.T. But you are right, there's so many, I've got so many blind spots. Like, I've not seen Die Hard. I've not seen Pulp Fiction, what? Which I know. I could go on, but I know that I should. But no, hadn't seen this, hadn't heard of it. Like, when you told me the title, I was like, oh, I think that kind of sounds familiar. But then ultimately, I don't think so. I think it just sounds, like you say, enough things sort of play off those words, or at least share some of the words yeah. that you kind of think, oh yeah, I've heard that around, sort of thing. But it's funny what you were saying, Tom, then, about obviously maybe on the surface it doesn't maybe traditionally feel like an uplifting film or a very positive film. But I watched this, so I'd had what felt like a very intense day at work. Basically, I had to drive down to Birmingham. It was just after the snow had fallen, and it was all very scary and very intense. And I was there filming all day, and then I got back late, and it was all just, oh God. And then I was like, oh, now I have to watch that film as well for the podcast. And I put it on, and I just fell into it completely. And I was like, it was like, I just needed it at that moment in my life. It was so weird. So usually I've got a pen and paper and I'm scribbling notes like crazy as I'm watching these films. And with this, after about 5 minutes, I was like, I don't want to make notes. I literally just want to watch it and I want to be in it. I absolutely loved it. And I loved everything about it. I loved it. I really loved it.
My other half is obviously who is very good friends with Alice. Watched it with me and she just went, Alice will love this.
Yeah, well, I did. You know me so well. I'm so predictable. Maybe I don't surprise you as much as you think, Josh. But yeah, I loved it. And there was so much that I loved about it, but we'll get into that. What about you, Josh? Had you seen this one before?
No, I hadn't. It had been on my... I keep a list of films that I want to watch because that's what I'm like. And this has been on it for ages and I've just never gotten to it. I don't know why. There's no particular reason why. It might be because it is 2.5 hours. So sometimes you have to prepare yourself to watch a slightly longer film, even though, I don't know, I always think 2.5 hours feels well longer than 2 hours, but it's half an hour, do you know what I mean? So, I don't know why I hadn't watched it before, but it had been on my list to watch for ages. So let's get into it then. So I'll come to you first, Alice. So you loved it then. What did you like about it? What did you specifically love about it? And then we'll come to Tom on what he thinks.
Like everything, pretty much, just like the way that the film's designed, the aesthetic, the script, some of the performances, the soundscape I thought was brilliant, on the soundtrack as well. So we've got a lot of Eddie Vedder in there, who I absolutely love. And even that, when that happened, I was like, oh, I'm just going to love this, aren't I? It's just me, hook, line and sinker sort of thing. I loved like the combination of these sort of really warm and sort of quite intimate scenes where you've got the people that he meets along the way who are really friendly and like are showing him this love and showing him this grace and stuff. But then he's also talking about, you know, how his parents, how he felt the sort of the violence and the abuse from that and these things balancing together. And he'd often say things, I think quoting people most of the time, about, you know, how terrible people are and how cold the world is and all this. But then there's these people around him going like, here's some money, here's some food, here's our floor for you to sleep on, or whatever it was, sort of thing. I thought Emile Hirsch was amazing as well. And like the pressure and the trust, I think, that was like placed on him to get this right. Like the film, it's him, isn't it? There's brilliant supporting cast. I mean, really good supporting cast around there, isn't there? And some real proper stars that show up in that. But it's all on him. And I just feel like the trust that the filmmakers have put into him to get it right, and then the pressure that he must have felt to actually deliver it, must have just been extraordinary. And he nailed it. And I can't think of anyone more perfect who could have done it. And I only realized for the first time as well in this, he really reminds me of Leo. Like, there were times in this where I was like, he looks like young Leo there. It was crazy. And I never thought about that before. And also, just going back to what you said then, Josh, because I saw the runtime as well, like 2.5 hours. And after about sort of 10, 15 minutes, I was like, how are they going to sustain this for all that? Like, is this going to drop off about halfway through? And I'm going to be like, oh, you know, here we go, like, keep it going sort of thing. But I didn't feel that at all. Like, I was absolutely hooked from start to finish and I loved it.
Well,
and then when it ended...
very often for you. Like, obviously you like a lot of the films we do, but you've never often completely hooked.
And not for that period of time as well. Because I don't know, like, if something's lacking in terms of like the script or the story or whatever it might be, I just sort of switch off. And or if the acting's bad, I'm just like, oh, you know, you're really struggling to hold my attention here. But with this, it just kept going and kept going. And the extra interesting thing about that as well is that a lot of the time he's just there on his own, just like plodding along. It's like, oh, I'm just in a bus and now I'm going to go pick some berries. Like so many sequences where there's no dialogue, you don't really hear anyone's voice, there's no script or anything. It's just like a combination of these like diegetic sounds and the music and the action. And again, just him sort of front and center bringing this whole thing to life. It was just so good. And I was just so surprised. I think I was just so surprised that I hadn't seen it before. And also, just finally as well, before we move on, sorry, Tom, this is meant to be about you. This is your film. This is your episode. I'm just getting carried away. I think it's, I've seen films like this before. So where we're translating something either obviously from a true story like this or from a book or whatever. And it's so hard. And it is so hard to get it right and to make sure you get all the points that are relevant, not put too much in there, but then also not take away so much that the audience feel like, oh, I don't really know why this happened or why that happened. I'm not connecting to that character or whatever. But this, I think it did such a good job and it utilized all the different sort of cinematic techniques to actually be able to bring it to life, to sort of bring those words on paper to life in a really effective way. It was just dead good, wasn't it? I just loved good, it. Isn't it? Yeah. I just loved it.
we'll come to you then, Tom. So obviously Alice has given you a fairly glowing review there. So what do you like about this film? What really draws you to it? Like you say, I think there's a really good point in there that you both touched on, which is sort of sometimes you need to hear the song that's being sung. And this film does reach to you in a certain moment. Like you might be in a mood where you want to watch something and this isn't it, but equally on the other side, if you are in the right mood like Alice was, it's probably perfect for that mood. So I think there's definitely something there. There are films that are broader and you think, well, I can put on, you know, Cool Runnings anytime and just enjoy myself, or you know, other films and stuff like that, but this is definitely it's a particular mood. But anyway, what do you like about this film? And if you could boil it down into a couple of points, what do you reckon, what do you like?
There's a few things really. One of the things is the kind of, it's, I suppose the only way I can say it is the big and the small of it. So there's a certain aspects of it that are huge. The landscapes, the scenery, a lot of the, you know, the high up cameras and the drones and things like that, where they've really got this incredible American landscape, which is some of the routes that the real Christopher McCandless was navigating through. But then when it comes to like the actual acting performances, when he's interacting with other people, not loads happens, but there's a real humanness to the interactions. You know, there's the hippie couple that he meets, and the lady's missing her son, and they're having like this kind of low key situation in their relationship that you don't really, you know, find out what happens. And there's this brief, you know, love interest when he's, you know, when he ends up playing guitar with the girl and all these little things. And they're so small and they're so human in contrast to this scenery, you know, and it kind of shows how small we are as humans in the greater scheme of things, you know, so subtly done. To have a film where really, you know, not that much happens. Like Alice says, he just does a load of walking and bumps into people, and, you know, they seem to really like him, and that doesn't seem to, you know, distract him from getting to where he needs to be. And that's kind of it. But there is a real humanness to it, a real humanity to the interactions, I think, with the people he meets on the way.
Yeah, I think for me that's where the film really shines, is that idea of, you know, everyone's lives is a little snow globe and sometimes they cross over into each other, or a web, whatever you want, whatever metaphor you want to choose, that idea. And I think that does it really well of he bumps into these people and he has an effect on their lives and they have an effect on his, but it's all just through, there's just, obviously what happens and it's tragic, but it's all, apart from that, it's all just low stakes stuff. It's just conversation, which is why I think the ending's probably, unless you go into it knowing the ending because of the book or because you know the true story, it's quite shocking.
I was shocked.
Because there's the thing of like, oh, so when you went into it, then I can't remember. Does it say it's a true story at the beginning?
I don't think so. Not that I noticed, and I didn't know if it was.
So you just thought, so at the end you were quite surprised to see the real picture and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And then I immediately went and read his whole Wikipedia page.
Yeah.
Like I read it from start to finish. I was just like, I need to know more about this guy.
Yeah, well, it's interesting as well because more's come out since the film. So obviously this film's now, what is it now? It's nearly 20 years old, more or less. But I believe, and you know, we won't go into it on the episode, especially because it is quite dark in places. But if you go into it, if you read about it, more's come out about why he actually did what he did. Because the film sort of makes it, he touches on it a little bit of abuse and stuff, but it makes it more like it's, my view is that, or my reading of it is that it comes from a almost like a frustration with expectation and emotional repression and power and hierarchy and all that, and just wanting to be free. Whereas if you read, it's actually a little bit darker than that and more to do with his parents, particularly his father's actual behaviour and stuff like that. So that's interesting. So you didn't know it was true going in. So how did you find the ending then?
I was shocked. Yeah. I was shocked, obviously, that it ends the way it did, that he dies, because it's really scary how he dies as well. It's like the knowing sort of ominous it's thing, like walking towards you. It's like, because he can't eat anything, or he at least can't process nutrients or whatever it is that this berry's done to him. Like the symptoms of eating that is you're going to starve to death. Mm. And he reads that in his book. He knows what he's done. And then we're just waiting for that to happen. And it was like a little bit like 127 hours where it's just like, well, obviously you're not getting out of here and you're going to die. But then, you know, he did get out, sort of thing.
Mm.
So it was just like, and you think like, oh, but something's going to happen, isn't it? Someone's going to stumble along and find him, or a helicopter's going to appear, or, you know, and it doesn't. And he just sort of crawls into a sleeping bag and he dies. And it's so like, it's so raw and like animalistic in a way. And he sort of, he moves between kind of looking at peace with what's happening and then looking terrified at what's happening and then back at peace. And we see him like looking out at the trees and stuff out through the window. And then it, I think it ends with like this shot just pulling away from him, but like with his eyes open, with his little head just sort of poking out his sleeping bag.
Out the sunroof or something, isn't it? Or out one of the windows.
It was
or something like that.
It was really scary in a way. And just like, it just, I don't know, like you feel, it just helps you feel probably what he was probably feeling at that time, which is just this, like, you can't stop it. It's that runaway train heading for you. It's like, oh shit, I actually can't do anything about it. And then I read, I think that like, he was actually, if he'd have just traveled up the river a bit, there was like a disused cable car route or something where he could have got over the river, like literally not too far up from him. But because he didn't like have a map and he didn't really have any local knowledge or anything, he didn't know it was there. So he obviously just thought.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Instead of deciding to go and, you know, just to keep walking and maybe try and find something, he just decided to stay there. I don't know, man. I was like, it was just really dark, but in like a beautiful and sort of poetic way. I don't know.
Like a sort of like a, but some birds' feathers are too bright sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting that because there's multiple layers to that ending. Obviously, they've got the general tragedy of a young man losing his life. But then you've also got that whole thing of his realization of the end of his journey, of basically the end. He realizes that it's just all better if you share it and you know, it's your life is enriched by the people you meet and stuff like that. And I think that that's the added emotional tragedy of it as well, is that he dies on his own and all he wants is other people. And that's the real, you know, got deep there, didn't we? Okay, so we'll move on to things that we might not like about Into the Wild, or that we would change about Into the Wild. Alice, anything from you? Is it more of it? Longer?
I could have done with another half an hour, to be honest.
Yeah, make it around 3 hours.
Definitely could have been longer. The only thing, and I have the same criticism nearly every time of films that are based on a true story or adapted from a book and then use this technique, but sort of the some of the voiceover and some of the narration, sometimes it does just feel a bit shoehorned in there, and it is just like, oh, we need to get these messages across to the audience just so they know that this is what's happened, like especially with the stuff with his sister who's doing a lot of the narration in sort of, I don't know if she's writing letters to him or if she's just imagining writing letters to him or imagining speaking to him. But some of it is just a bit like, oh, we just need to dump some exposition here. But as I say that, I have got no alternative as a better way to do that. Like, I don't know what the answer is, because you can't show and not tell everything.
Mm.
Like, you have to just tell the audience some things. Otherwise, we would be here for three and a half hours, that sort of thing. So I don't really have an alternative on how else to get that information across. But it was just like sometimes when the voiceover or narration, whatever you call it, would start up again. And I'd be like, just sort of waiting for it to end. It's like, oh, let's just get back into the story
I didn't mind that side of it. Because the way I took it was she was sort of your guide through the story. But equally at times, she didn't know everything that happened to him.
Yeah.
So there was an element of, A, she was helping you frame the story, but B, I don't know what happened. So maybe this is what was going through his head when he made this decision. And I thought that added another sort of layer of emotional depth to it, of, you know, this idea of, well, why did he do that? And why did he do it the way he did it, sort of thing? But I know what you mean. It feels like we've got to do something to keep everything nicely tight and stuff like that. But what is it if it's not that?
Yeah, exactly. And I don't have the answer to that. You know, some films use, you know, letters or just like people's in a monologue or whatever it is.
What about like
clippings, various things like that, isn't it?
You know, in Babe, the little mice. What about that?
So the three little mice
come on and like.
Yeah, but it's three bears, this. Maybe.
Yeah.
Because he's in the Alaskan wilderness. Yeah. Okay, I see where you go with this. Yeah.
Yeah.
But to be honest, that was it. And that was me. That's me just trying to find something to bring to this part of the podcast, really, because we have to be balanced. What about you, Tom? Well, anything that you don't like about it or that you would change?
Not really. No, I'm pretty happy with it. You know, I think they kind of got it. I remember the first few times I watched it, I struggled with his relationship with his parents, you know, because it kind of, it hints towards some horrible things happening. But then at the same time, you see how tortured they are. And you kind of like, because there's not enough of, I don't know. Sometimes he just seems really, really harsh. And then obviously he had his own reasons for that. And I remember when I first watched it, it was like I couldn't decide how the film was trying to make me feel about his relationship with his parents, you know, whether it was I don't want to say justified or deserved, you know, the suffering. But I mean, that bit towards the end where his dad sits in the road and squeezes his trousers and crikey, like you feel that the loss, or even the first scene of the film is his mum waking up from a dream thinking that she spoke to him. And so I started off, the first thing you see is that. So straight away, I had so much empathy for his parents. And then you kind of find out that maybe it wasn't, you know, is that empathy misplaced on my part, or, you know, it just becomes a little bit tricky. I don't know. I know loads of geeky stuff about this film, and I've read all the different books about it and stuff. But I know that his sister, when it first came to making the film, and the book that was about it as well, his sister said she would only talk to the people involved if they didn't write about the seriousness of the family stuff.
Yes. Which is why it came out later.
Yeah. And then, when she wanted to give them a chance to sort of say sorry, and when they never did, she wrote her own book and kind of told everybody everything. I haven't read her book because I kind of thought, well, you know, you didn't go walking around. You just had that's quite a sad story, really. You didn't go anywhere and had a really horrible childhood. It's not really, it sounds really a sad read, basically. But that kind of, I know, before I knew all that stuff, yeah, I was never sure how to feel about his parents. And that's the only thing I kind of feel was not quite right. But it sounds like they didn't have much, you know, they were working with, you know, whatever they had. But other than that, I mean, considering so much of it is based on just kind of people's opinions and ideas. And when they tried to track his path down for the book, they just had to try and like find people that met him, and everyone who met him, he used a different name and he talked to them about different things. So considering they're piecing it together from all these different perspectives of people knew him at different times and going through different things, and no one's quite sure how much of the truth he was telling when he met them, and memory's a funny thing anyway. I think they did an incredible job of piecing it all together. I was kind of like quite happy. So yeah, there's not much I'd change really. No, not at all.
So interesting, just to pick on what you said there, Tom, that's a really good point. They made this they made it with the consent of the family, but it also looks like rather than just that, they went one step beyond and made it with the cooperation of the family, which doesn't always happen. And then at the end, there's a really pointed bit of text in the credits before the credits start that basically is saying this was made like with their cooperation, but you don't normally get that. You might get it at some point, but I think it lingers very much. And I think that the filmmakers, Sean Penn and stuff like that, are making a point there of this is made, you know, essentially it's whether it's their view of what happened or whatever, but it's very much there. They have been involved, you know, they've not just taken it and, you know, Bohemian Rhapsody did it or whatever, which is, you know, a very, you know, we've touched on before, both me and Alice, and our opinion of Bohemian Rhapsody, the film, songs, you know, song is song, isn't it? But yeah, I thought that's really interesting. And the other thing as well is, I think they allow you a certain amount of rope to make up your own mind. So of, you know, why did he do it? Were his parents right? How bad were his parents with each other, with the kids or whatever? The bit I struggled a little bit to ratify in my mind was leaving his sister rather than leaving his parents, because if it shows what it shows, he's sort of leaving her on her own with them. But equally, it never shows that she couldn't have gone with him. So it's a difficult one. In terms of what I didn't like, look, there's not loads. I mean, overall, I thought it was, you know, I thought it was enjoyable and poignant and emotional and that sort of thing. I did think it was a little bit too long, which I know, Alice, you're going to laugh because I always say that. But for me,
over 2 hours, fucking hell.
It's not even that right. I don't mind a long film. I've touched on this before. But I thought the only thing I'd really say was that the film really thrived when he was speaking to other people, and there was a lot of him on his own. And I think if you'd have just got rid of a little bit of that and had a little bit more of interaction with other people, I think I would have felt the pace a little bit better. But there was a bit where he'd just been speaking to people, and then it cut to him again on his own in the woods, and he was having like a slow-mo shot of him sort of having a shower, like washing his hair. And there was an element of me of like, I've seen this now. I've seen him on his own. I've seen him on a mountaintop with his arms outstretched and loving the fresh air and all sorts of that. You know, I got that point. I think it was labored a little bit, but not a massive crime. Just that was just something I would change about it. In terms of any other issues, not really. I mean, I'd say the pragmatist and the realist in me has a bit of an issue with like burning your money. Although I know he gave like 25 grand to Oxfam. So I suppose what he burns is sort of just the money in his pocket, really. But equally, that's not a problem with the film. It's a problem with the text. It's a problem with the actual story. So I don't think, you can't really have a problem with what happens when you're adapting something. So that's not so much a problem with the film. But other than that, no, nothing really. And I can see why this has developed such a cult following, why it's, and it definitely, we talked before, didn't we, about how it's seen, you know, it's certainly the film that you might need to see in a certain state of mind or at a certain time in your life or whatever. I think the fact is there's definitely something in this film that speaks to people, whether it's that wanting to be free or whether it can sometimes just be, I wish I was brave enough to do that, or it can be, yeah, I'm sick of my job, I just want to walk. It's the same. There are other films that speak to people in a similar way. You know, how many times have you heard, and it's in a different way, but how many times have you heard like falling down referred to when someone's having a bad day in that idea. I mean, I don't think you've seen that, Alice, have you? We've touched on that before. Mm-hmm. Basically, there's a whole thing of like, the film appears as if the lead character's having a really bad day and he just sort of loses his shit. There's more to it in the film, but it's become a bit of a cult thing of like, you know, he goes to try and get breakfast at a fast food place, but it's past 11:30, so he can't get breakfast. You know, is that, and he gets, essentially, it's getting frustrated with bureaucracy and red tape and just going, oh, I just want to live my life sort of thing. So, so I thought that was really interesting. So we'll move on to talking about the critical reception in the box office, then, and we'll see if we can decide, is it underrated, underseen, both, neither, whatever. Alice, how do you think it did?
I mean, probably quite well, critically, I reckon. It's just, like, it's a well-made film. It's a well-told story. The different, you know, cinematic elements of it are really well done. So I reckon it probably got quite high. I think maybe we're looking at into the eights for this.
Into the eights. And what about you? What would you say? That's high for you as well.
I know. But easily into the eights for me. So I reckon it probably got, like, I'll say it got an 83 or an 8.3.
Okay.
And I would give it maybe just a little bit more than that and more like an 86 or an 8.6. I really liked it.
That's big, Tom, for Alice. Like, an
that's
Alice,
big for me.
An Alice 8 is a mean 9.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Well, mate, we'll take that.
And what about you, Tom? I mean, do you know how it did commercially or critically or anything like that? Or would you have a crack?
Yeah, I don't particularly know much about it. I would assume quite well. You know, there's a lot there for people to like. If you like scenery, you're laughing. If you like, you know, really solid acting performances, you're laughing. People like Sean Penn. You know, he is like, he tends to only get involved in things that are kind of like, you know, knocking on doors for awards and things like that, you know, if he's involved. So yeah, I would guess that, like, critically it did quite well.
If you like Eddie Vedder as well, this is definitely
like
for you.
Jam.
This is
quite a lot of that.
There you go. Well, you know, Pearl Jam are one of my favourite bands, if not my favourite band.
Really,
and I actually, how I found the film, I was in a record shop and I saw the soundtrack and I was like, oh, I didn't know he was doing any new music. What's this Into the Wild thing? And so I heard the record first and then was keeping an eye out for the movie. So I kind of like, I went into it purely because of the Eddie Vedder link, really. I knew nothing about
Into the Pictures.
Yeah. And then when I saw it at the cinema, and I was in France at the time, and I found this really old, battered cinema, this independent cinema, and went to watch it. And I was so blown away by it. I went back the next night and watched it again. And I sat in the same seat with the same snacks and just relived exactly the same night.
Oh my God.
But it is one of those, it haunted me. It stayed with me, that film. And it made me want to read the book and go on the Wikipedia and listen to the podcast. Like, it there's so much that to explore within it. But that was my...
For what it's worth, I did the same thing with Flubber when I was 8. I went back and watched Flubber the next week. I mean, Flubber's a bit deeper than this. You know, there's more to it. There's a lot of stuff. What do you think Flubber has to say about mental health?
Probably a lot, actually, if we went back and examined it.
To be fair, actually, there's a lot in Flubber about him, like, not committing to the woman he wants to marry. In fact, isn't the woman he wants to marry in Flubber Christopher McCandless's mum in this? I think it is.
That's crazy if it is, Josh.
I think it is. Hang on. We never normally Google stuff, but I am going to Google stuff, listeners. So it's Marcia Gay Harden, isn't it, who plays his mum? Yeah, it is.
Oh, that's wild.
Did it on purpose. Anyway, we'll do Flubber another time. Maybe should they come back next year and do Flubber, Tom?
Put it on the list.
Anyway, so back to the critical reception then. At the time of recording over on IMDb, it gets 8.1 out of 10 on IMDb. The critics are harsher than the audience, as they quite often are, and they give
Rotten Tomatoes. Sorry, Josh.
What did I say?
You said IMDb again.
Did I?
You said IMDb for
that's
the first
not
one.
The rest.
And then
that's
move,
not. Yeah.
Move on to Rotten
this
Tomatoes.
This is another website, everybody. This is Rotten Tomatoes. The critics, they give it 83%, and the audience give it quite a staggering 89%, which, if you work that out as an average, is about 84% or 8.4.
Ooh,
so nearly
so
there,
bang
Alice.
On. I was bang on with the critics, though. As
you were.
I said 83, didn't I? Oh, good for me.
Yes.
But yeah, that was really close to what I was thinking. I mean, that's, to me, that's all I'm glad that, those were the scores. I think if anything had been in the seven, I'd have been like, like, no, you're missing something there. I'm happy with those scores very much.
I think this is definitely a film that the critics would love. And if the audience like it, they would think, I'm going to go on and make a point of rating that, you know, so that sort of thing. What do we think then? Are we happy with those, Tom?
Yeah, very much so. I think they got it about right. You know, I could see why some people might think it was like a little bit pretentious or, you know, like thing, you know, I can see the reasons why people might choose to dislike it and you know, maybe not be a little bit higher. But yeah, on the whole, you take that, wouldn't you? You take that all day.
Yeah.
If Sean Penn is over the moon, I would imagine.
Are we saying that's appropriately rated then? Are we happy with that?
I would say appropriately rated, yeah. I think those are good scores.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so box office wise, then I'm not sure what the budget was, but according to Box Office Mojo, the worldwide box office, and obviously this isn't always a full picture in terms of whether it's underseen because you've got to bear in mind streaming and who's watched afterwards, but the box office is 56 million quid, which is obviously, it's not loads. Pretty good for a film of this sort of ilk, you know, if you think of it as more like an indie film or a lower budget film, because I'll tell you one thing about it, actually, is it looks amazing, but I don't think it was made for loads of money. I don't think this is a, you know, a $200 million film, is it? So I think 56 million quid. I mean, box office-wise, I'd say that probably is underseen. I know it's got a bit of a following afterwards, but I still think, I think this film, you know, based on the themes and everything, I think it's probably got quite a lot of legs to go on and grow an audience as it goes along. So I'd say that is underseen. What would you say to that, Tom? What do you reckon?
Yeah, I mean, you know, 56 mil, like you say, it's not, you know, it's not, you know, big bucks. I mean,
it's not Star Wars.
I saw it twice, so I feel like I contributed appropriately.
At least
you know?
A tenner. But,
Yeah. But, you know, often if I'm like chatting films with people and people, you talk about your favorite films, it's not that often I come across people who have seen it. It really doesn't feel like that, you know. And like I say, because it's quite hard to explain, you often feel like, oh, you got to watch this, and you don't feel like they're going to after you've had that conversation with them. So I think, you know, that underseen is probably fair. And you know, I don't, sometimes I think the, considering how impressive the imagery through the film is and some of the camera work and all that sort of stuff, I don't always think like the way that's portrayed when you see it, like when you see it on the Netflix menu, it doesn't look particularly, you know, it's just like a, you know, it's like a guy sat on a bus. And I don't know if I knew nothing about it at all and there wasn't the Eddie Vedder connection for me and I was just at home trying to find something to watch my missus, I don't know if I would look at the, you know, the trailer that they use, or you know, when you're deciding whether to watch and it plays a bit of the film and sometimes they pick a really random bit and you think that's not going to make anyone watch it. I do think Into the Wild is a little bit like that. Use the word wild and I think people are going to see that and expect like wilder. Is he going to fight a tiger or something like that?
The Liam Neeson one where he fights the wolves.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Not wild as in he's just going to sit on a bus. Yeah. You know, like it's, I can kind of see why maybe people would not choose to watch it.
We've definitely had that before, haven't we, Alice, where we've picked a film and said this film was let down by the marketing. whether that's the money that they had or whether what they decided to do. There's definitely been quite a few where we've gone, if you saw the poster for this, you'd be like, what is this film? What is it? Like,
Jersey Girl was the big one.
Jersey Girl, the whole thing around it didn't do justice to the Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez rom-com. No, it's not.
Exactly.
It's about,
no, it's not at all.
It's about dealing with grief. Like, that's what it's about. But so are we saying appropriately rated and underseen then?
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that.
Works for me.
Well, there we go. Another one in the bag. Tom, thanks so much for coming on. Hope you're happy with the outcome.
I am. Yeah, I feel really chuffed. I feel a little bit like, particularly because Alice liked it so much, I feel like I've, like, you know, you know, like at school when you've done really well and you get a pat on the back, you know, I feel like, you know, quite justified and apple for teacher sort of situation.
A lot of guests say this is a little bit like parents' evening. You've brought your film. It's like Into the Wild's doing really well. It just needs to learn to sit still and listen.
That's it. I feel really proud. It's as if it was mine, you know, as if I'm Sean Penn in this scenario.
I think that's the thing though. When you've got the film because everyone's got the film that they think, like, oh, I love this and no one else does. And, like, you try and show it to people, you try and tell people about it, and they're just like, oh, not interested, or they watch it and it's like, nah, it was all right or whatever. But then when someone else, it's like, because when you recommend something to someone and then they love it as well, I love that feeling. It's like, yes! And if I didn't like it, you'd know, because I would have had about three things to say about it.
Yeah, I had a friend who, it took me ages to get him to watch The Bear. Mm. And then when he finally did, he loved it. I was like, you've made it and gone, oh, good, he likes my show. Yeah. Like, you've had no hand in it whatsoever. But yeah, anyway, Tom, tell the guys at home a little bit about what you've got going on, where we can find you. Tell us a little bit about your podcast.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. So I host a show called Proper Mental, and I speak to a guest each week about a different aspect of mental health and mental illness and mental well-being. And we'll kind of do that in loads of different ways, really. Sometimes that's a lived experience episode and someone will chat to me about their life and what's gone on through it. Or it might be about a specific aspect of mental illness or a specific diagnosis. Sometimes I chat to people about different aspects of wellness, you know, episodes about like sleep and yoga and things like that. And everything in between, you know, and it's really interesting. It kind of, you never know, often like there might be a guest who has a certain experience of, you know, depression or something like that. But the way that these diagnoses and these situations in people's lives kind of like overlap and interact, there's always some common ground, you know, and it's about just exploring, going maybe a little bit deeper than the sort of the fluffy mainstream view of mental health, and kind of getting into the nuts and bolts and realities of living day to day with a mental illness, essentially, and swapping stories about it. And that's it in a nutshell, really. That's kind of what I do.
That's really interesting, and I think it's really good. I think the point should be made as well that, unlike here, where, you know, essentially someone just comes on and talks about a film, you know, for your podcast, you know, people have to come on and really bear things to you. So I think that's, you know, I think it should be said that fair play to you and fair play to them for opening up and coming on, because, you know, not everyone would. And some people would too much, you never know. But, you know, but I think that's really interesting. So I'm interested, like, how do people come to you? Do you approach them? Like, how does it tend to work? Does someone go, I've got this really interesting point to make about, let's say, I don't know, OCD or something like that? Like, how does that tend to work?
Yeah, that's a little, you know, I love that you've kind of picked that up from it, Josh. I really appreciate that, mate. But yeah, I sometimes do feel a bit like an ambulance chaser, you know, like a seedy lawyer, like, oh, you've had a breakdown, I'll just slide into your DMs, you know, like, there is that element to it. But no, I tend to, you know, like, lots of the people I connect with are people who, like, they do something in the mental health space. They maybe write a book about it or blog about it or speak about it, you know, so you know that they're comfortable with it. And it's not a like a trauma cast. Like, we don't dig around in the really, like, challenging stuff just for the sake of it as well, you know. And sometimes we go there, you know, sometimes it has to go there. It just kind of like just finding the balance, really. I think it helps because there's, rather than being about one thing, it's about all different types of things. And that kind of keeps things moving around so we don't get stuck in one place, you know. It gives me a lot of scope, you know. And the people I speak to, I suppose they're used to speaking about it, and that allows a certain level of vulnerability and openness. And, you know, it's a tightrope, I think, because if it, you know, like, you don't want, you know, you still want, I still want to be entertaining with it. You know, I think there's a lot of humor in out of context. There's a lot of humor in mental health. People do some very bizarre things, you know. I mean, it comes from my experience with mental illness. And when I look at some of my behavior over the years, it really was quite bizarre. And you get to a place where you can kind of, you know, you can appreciate the oddness of it, you know, and that there's humor in there too. And, you know, it's just human stories, and human stories, they have funny bits, they have sad bits, they have weird bits, they have boring bits, and everything in between, you know. So it's trying to explore all of that rather than just be some sort of like sad cast, you know.
We could start sad cast if you want.
That could be a new thing. What, if anything, do you feel like has surprised you the most since you've been doing it and like talking to all these people?
That's a wonderful question. I think the overlap, really, between the human experience, you know, and we often, like, particularly when it comes to diagnosis and labels. We love to put stuff in boxes, but humans don't work like that at all, you know. And the people, I always like to say that we all break in different ways. You know, some people have horrible things happen to them. Some people do horrible things, whatever. We all break in different ways, but often it's the same things that come spilling out when we do. And it's the same emotions, the same feelings, the same inability to talk about them or to sit with them or to know what's going on, you know. And it's so strange. You can have people with two different backgrounds, different diagnosis, different ways of getting to wherever it was they end up. And there'll just be that one little nugget that kind of like just matches with someone else's story and the overlaps. And it's just, like I say, there's a real humanness to exploring this stuff. And it is just a lot of mental illness is just the same feelings and emotions we all feel. It's just sometimes they're on steroids, right? Sometimes they're out of control and we can't grab hold of them. And that's always something to me that really, really hits home, I think, in these stories. And the human condition, how resilient humans can be when they're really going through something, you know, how important things like hope are and connection and talking about these things. It always jumps out to me, and people really, really go through some things and come out the other side and they're still standing. And it's so inspiring and it's so useful, because if you're on that path, but maybe you're a few steps back, right? And you maybe don't feel like you're going to be still standing at the end. And to hear someone else say, I was where you are and, you know, and you can be okay. I don't quite know how you're going to be okay. And I'm not quite sure what we can do to get you there, but we can get you there. And there's something really, really lovely about it.
I feel like I could listen to you talk for hours.
Speaking of that, then, in that case, if Alice wants to listen to you talk for hours, Tom, is it available wherever you get your podcasts?
Where can I find the podcast? What's the Twitter handle? Give me all the deets.
Oh, mate, at Proper Mental Podcast, absolutely everywhere. And yeah, it's at all the usual sort of podcasty places. Wherever you listen this to
what,
now.
What day of the week?
Now. Comes out on a Monday. Yeah,
every Monday, okay.
Every Monday, yeah.
Well, when this comes out, we'll put the links in the episode description. We'll put some links out on social media as well, because it is really important that everyone, you know, shares, listens, and knows that we're all in it together. So, Tom, thank you very much for joining us. Thanks for talking to us about the film. Thanks for sharing with us about the podcast. And we'll see you next time. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been a real, real pleasure. Thank you.
There we go then, Tom Davis, another guest episode in the bag, and what a start to 2024.
Oh, we done well there.
We have. Thanks very much to Tom for coming on. We'll make sure we put all the links in the episode descriptions and on social media as well, but do make sure you check out Proper Mental Podcast. It is well, well worth your time, because there's all things on there about mental health and other stuff, little bits and bobs. Very, very interesting, and Tom is a wonderful guy. Didn't deserve him, really, did we?
I don't think so.
We're terrible.
I don't know. I don't know where we go from here, either, to be honest, Josh.
We're just bad people. And,
like you said,
know.
First and last. Maybe just call it quits there. Quit while you're ahead.
Anyway, we're going to be talking about another film next week, first episode of February. Alice, It's your turn to pick. What are we going to be watching?
So we had Jolly January.
Oh, God.
So now I want to go for fucking terrible February.
Oh, God.
So the first film for February that we're going to be watching is Watership Down.
Jesus.
Get ready for that. Get yourself in the right headspace. Go and listen to Tom's podcast, then watch the film, and then maybe go and listen to Tom's podcast again. Then that might help you. That might help you get through this.
Yes, join us next week where we're going to be talking about Watership Down. In the meantime, if you'd like to get in touch with us, the email address is filmsandthatpod@gmail.com. We're all the social medias, if you just search for Just Filmed and That, and you'll find us on Facebook, X, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, all of the places. We're on Patreon as well, so if you head into the episode description, there's a link to Patreon there. All tiers include ad-free extended episodes, which you will get access to a day or two early, and start from £1 a month. Any support you can give us will be, of course, hugely appreciated. We're on the television as well, aren't we, Alice?
We are indeed. Every Friday from 6pm, you can catch us on the local TV network. So if you live in Birmingham, Bristol, Leeds, Liverpool or the northeast of England, you can find us on Channel 7 on Freeview. Or if you live in North Wales or South Wales, you can find us on Channel 8 on Freeview. And I'm also uploading all the videos to Dailymotion. So if you want to check out exactly what we're up to, just head on over there, type in Just Films in that, and you'll be able to see our beautiful, beautiful faces talking about all our favourite underrated and underseen films.
Yes, lots of ways to see us, hear us, and as ever, thank you very much for listening. We'll see you next week for Watership Down. It's goodbye from me. Cheerio!
Bye!
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.